We're back with the World Soccer Talk podcast, the only podcast on the planet that focuses on watching soccer on television, online, and apps. In episode 75, we feature news about Fox Sports acquiring the English language and Spanish language TV rights to several Liga MX clubs. Plus, we've got which European league sold their TV rights for $1.3 billion, and big TV ratings news about the UEFA Champions League final between Liverpool and Real Madrid. Plus, lots of letters from you, the listeners. My name is Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, and I'm joined by Kartik Krishnaya. Just a couple of weeks ago to go, Kartik, until the World Cup kicks off. And it's the calm before the storm. So for listeners and for you, Kartik, it's probably a good time to kind of just take a break. Not as many soccer games on television. We can look back this past week, but it's a chance to actually recharge those batteries, because in 2 weeks from now, it's going to be essentially three games a day for a whole month.
Yeah, for me, I'm trying to take this time to not really watch any soccer, and I say this, and I made the announcement of taking a couple weeks off, but there's always news that happens, and there's more and more news that seems to be coming out about U.S. soccer and Major League Soccer and our lower divisions in the U.S., and quite frankly, Chris, I mean, I'm connected, as you know, as our listeners know, to a number of local clubs in South Florida, and they're I'm going Wednesday, Saturday, attending matches. So I was at a Miami FC versus Fort Lauderdale Storm game last night. I'll be actually calling the Boca FC versus Miami FC game on Saturday for radio. And then there's an Open Cup game the next Wednesday. So I say I'm taking a break, but soccer never sleeps.
Yeah, I guess for listeners, and myself included too, it's probably a good time to actually go see your local clubs. I mean, go see your, whether it's USL or NPSL or Major League Soccer, or whatever league it may be, it's a good chance to kind of go to some of those. So if you do have a local club, definitely check it out. So Kartik, we've got some big news this week across the board, but let's go ahead and start off with what we've been watching and what stood out for you this past week.
Yeah, so Fulham and Aston Villa, obviously, in the championship final, which was on ESPN Plus behind a paywall here in the United States. John Champion called the match in the style that only John Champion can. And it's funny, I think we're seeing so many championship matches on the ESPN family of networks this year, where John Champion now has become, for American audiences, the voice of the championship, much like and we're used to his voice on the Premier League, and we're used to his voice on other ESPN produced broadcasts, even in the U.S. International Champions Cup, etc. Some U.S. men's national team games, occasional MLS games, but very soothing, very calming. I thought it was a rather pedestrian match considering what was at stake. I mean, you never know what you get in these championship finals. You get the Swansea Reading final from a couple of years ago, which we know you were on the edge of your seat for, Chris, and very nervous, big day in Swans history. Or do you get a final like this, or the year Palace played Watford in the final? The semifinals in both ties had been fantastic, and Watford and Palace played in the final. It was one of the worst matches I can remember watching on the big stage. This was a good 30 minutes from Fulham. After that, I thought the match was pretty poor. Jack Grealish stood out as a player that he's developed and evolved his game. I mean, there was a lot of hype about him a few years ago when Villa were still in the Premier League. He didn't pan out at that time. A lot of controversy about whether he committed to England or the Republic of Ireland internationally at the time. But now he seems a tidy player. And then on the Fulham side, Sessegnon, player everyone wants to see. There was a lot of articles written after this match, Chris, about how Fulham could help revive the kind of stylistic feel of the Premier League next season. I know there are a lot of Premier League apologists that get mad at me on Twitter when I say that the league is simply not that good right now by relative to where it's been in the past and relative to other top European leagues. But that's not just an opinion I have. It's an opinion a lot of writers and people who cover the league professionally have, that the Premier League is down, that the there's a reason why you've seen diminishing performances in Europe, other than obviously Liverpool this season. But a feeling is that more and more teams are playing negatively because of the gap between the top six and the rest of the league. There's an optimism about Fulham, similar to the optimism people shared about Blackpool several years under Ian Holloway and maybe more recently, Watford when they came up. Although Watford was promoted under this manager and he got sacked over the summer, and they became a more defensive side under Kiki Sanchez Flores. But Fulham, there's a lot of optimism out there, Chris, about the kind of football they're going to play. Maybe they'll be a team that is fighting and scrapping their way up the Premier League table, playing open, expansive football, nice, slick passing football, unlike what we've seen recently, which is teams that will bunker. And even if they intend to play nicely, like Eddie Howe's Bournemouth, eventually fall into a pattern where they're bunkering a lot more than they want to because of just the gap in level of player and talent. So a lot of optimism about Fulham. I get the sense that people are very happy they're coming up because of the stock.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things, though, Kartik. Sometimes it's, to me, it's more so the TV revenue is a factor in why some of these Premier League clubs, especially the bottom half, was so many teams were so negative because there was so much on the line. The easiest way to score is kind of just keep it negative, keep it tight, and just launch the ball forward and hope for the best type of thing, rather than constructively set up a team to play a fluid style of football, very attacking minded, you know what I mean, kind of a lot of speed, etc. That's much harder to do than to do kind of the basics. And the basics is kind of what I think we've seen this past season in the Premier League, just too many teams that play kind of a very basic style. Hopefully Fulham will be it. I mean, hopefully that'll inject some positivity into the league. For me personally, one of the most appealing factors of watching Fulham play is actually just seeing the games from Craven Cottage. I mean, one of the most amazing stadiums in England, and whether you're in person or in television, but just seeing the games from there, it's just a scenic stadium, scenic spot. That's what I'm looking forward to. For this match, I watched this. Actually, I didn't watch it. I listened to it on Talk Sport. So it was Nigel Adderley and Dean Ashton doing the commentary. And I was originally planning to sign up for ESPN Plus to watch the Championship playoffs and the League One, League Two playoffs. I didn't. So at this point, I'm probably going to wait until this summer to see if Swansea's going to be available. Well, actually, some of the games will be on ESPN Plus. So I'll probably end up signing up end of July, beginning of August, and signing up for ESPN Plus just to watch Swansea play in the Championship games through there. Usually play once or twice a month through that way. But still, for me, ESPN Plus doesn't have that pull, doesn't have that thing that I'm going to be like, okay, I got to watch it, I got to have it. While for you, Kartik, I know with ESPN FC, being a huge fan of that show, that's a huge hook for you. I like the show, I like the people on it. It just I usually don't have time to watch that show all the time as much as I would like to. And then Kartik, so the big game then on Saturday after the Fulham game, the Fulham Aston Villa game, which was a little bit disappointing, the actual performance was Real Madrid against Liverpool in the UEFA Champions League final. This one, Kartik, it was interesting too, because speaking of ESPN, what was ESPN's coverage like in the week leading up to the actual final in Kiev?
Yeah, so ESPN FC's crew was in Kiev the entire week, led by Dan Thomas. You had Gab Marcotti there, Stuart Robb, Rob Honigstein, really covering the Klopp angle. Sid Lowe was there, and they really dug into the nuts and bolts of the Champions League final, starting on Monday, all the way through Saturday and Sunday, where they now ESPN FC is 7 days a week. So six ESPN FC shows were anchored from Kiev. Now they would have Seb Salazar back in Bristol with Shahin Hislop or Stevie Nichol or Alejandro Moreno to go over their views, but it was all kind of Champions League final wall to wall at all times. And there was a little bit of MLS thrown in there, a little bit of transfer talk, or actually, I guess a lot of transfer talk, but there always is on that show. But it was fantastic. And you wonder, okay, Fox is the rights holder. Do we even go down this path,
yeah,
Chris?
Yeah, go down it.
Fox is the rights holder, and they had no one in Kiev other than a reporter. Right?
Yeah, Keith Costigan.
Keith Costigan.
Yeah.
ESPN had made the commitment the entire week. Now, the same thing happened last year in Cardiff. It was one thing when it was in Cardiff. Look, most of you, if you're Americans who listen to the show, you probably, like Chris and I, go to the UK. every year, every other year, every third year, but you go often. Getting to Cardiff is not very difficult from the East Coast of the United States, but getting to Kiev is a whole nother ball of wax. And yet they still made the institutional commitment to take people based in the U.S. and then grab their European-based correspondents and bring them to Kiev, which is quite impressive. And again, their previews, ESPN FC, it's now behind the paywall, unfortunately, as you mentioned. But all of that was indispensable because there was no buildup. There was no previews. There was no real bumper coverage from Fox at all.
Yeah.
Now, again, they've lost the rights. I get that. But this is something that's gone on in previous years also.
Yeah, it's puzzling because this is probably the first time in my memory I can think of where Fox didn't send anyone to any of the – well, sideline reporter accepted. I mean, so Keith Costin, yes. But in terms of commentators, either commentators or co-commentators or studio analysts, they didn't send anyone to anywhere in the Champions League this season. I think last season, didn't they send the crew to probably, yeah, they're probably in Cardiff on that one. But this season, they didn't send anyone from the commentating, co-commentating or talent other than a pitch side reporter. And then you have to think about FA Cup. I don't think they sent anyone to any of the FA Cup matches. In previous years, they've had people there in the stadium commentating the final, at least, and sometimes they've done semifinals, etc., especially when they're doing the Gus Johnson thing and had Ian Wright and a bunch of others kind of go into those games. So it's puzzling because, I mean, it's the last season. It's the last season for the FA Cup for Fox and the Champions League. You would think it's down to cost cutting. I can't think of any other reason why they wouldn't send the crew other than to maybe give more rationale or maybe to support their claim that most commentators commentate from a studio off the mic, off the monitor. That's the only thing I can think of. It just does not make sense at all. I will give credit to Keith Costigan, though, too, because with the UEFA Champions League final pregame show, within a few minutes, he jumped right in, and the first interview he got was with Steve McManaman, pitch sides in Kiev, and that was a great interview there to get that opportunity there. But overall, I mean, it just... it's really embarrassing. I mean, to be the rights holder, and then you have NBC, who has their own team of people every single weekend throughout the entire season. And then I think this past season, they had the crew. They sent them out with the whole crew. I mean, Rebecca Lowe and the two Robbies, etc., sent them out to UK twice during the season to do kind of a whole full weekend. So really bizarre from Fox and. Really disappointing. I mean, we'll get more into the TV ratings a little bit later, but disappointing where they're just half-assing it.
Yeah.
And then we got the DraftKings infomercial, too, right in the pregame. So it was just, it's as bad as you can get, really, unfortunately.
Well, taking their cue from Don Garber on the gambling angle, I guess.
Before you jump into the USA Bolivia, so I did listen to Talk Sport Radio 2 for the Rotherham against Shrewsbury League 1 playoff final, which went to extra time. And through radio, that sounded like a really thrilling match, end-to-end action. Rotherham eventually going through on that one in extra time. And then we had the Bolivia-USA game that was on Memorial Day. And I'm not sure about you, Kartik, so I haven't talked to you about this one, but for me... I had to switch it off after about 20 minutes. I mean, Bolivia was so bad. They were so bad in this game, just from the back, just making basic mistakes. And it wasn't until later that I found out this was essentially a Bolivia C team. This was a really, really weak Bolivia team. And it was so one-sided, and Bolivia was so bad. I was just, okay, I just switched it off. How about you?
How dare you say that? The narrative now is that U.S. are world beaters, that this group of kids are going to be the greatest generation. They're going to be like the Belgian generation that's playing currently. I can't talk about the U.S. men's national team. I mean, I made it a policy, and people who follow me on Twitter know I tweet about anything, not just soccer, but obviously politics and travel and global society and all kinds of current events, and don't have a filter. I stopped tweeting during U.S. men's national team games over a year ago because of the the delusion, the high levels of delusion U.S. fans have. And I thought, okay, maybe after non-qualification, that's changed. The levels of delusion after this match are perhaps worse than what we used to see. I mean, it's as if, and then there are people who are arguing with me privately saying things along the lines of, well, you know, it's different now because all these young players are going to be playing together, and they've shown so much, and they have technical ability that Americans haven't had before. No, Americans have for years hyped up whether it's the Juan Agudelos or the Danny Satellas or the Sal Zizzos. I mean, I could go on and on. Guys that were supposed to be, you know, even guys like Charles Rankin who and Joseph Gaia, who never amounted to anything. So it's just – it's just that cycle again. The difference being the senior players have been so discredited that there's been to integrate all these young players from the youth national team into the senior national team at an earlier stage, which could be a good thing or could be a very bad thing. We don't know. And to just kind of assume that all of these players, when there's a history of American players dropping off between the ages of 18 and 22, we know we've talked about this before. The U.S. tends to do well at youth tournaments. At U17 and U20 tournaments, not at the U23 level. We've seen them not qualify for two successive Olympics. But the U.S. tends, with some exceptions, to do well at the U17 and U20 level. Those players then hit a wall in their development between 18 and 22. And in often cases, it doesn't matter. Often it doesn't matter whether they're in Major League Soccer, because a lot of people in the narrative want to blame MLS, or if they're in Europe. There's some sort of mentality or mental block with American players. Now, there are exceptions. Christian Pulisic is clearly an exception, but I don't know if Justin McKinney is an exception yet. I don't know that any of these other guys we've seen are exceptions yet. In fact, Rubio Rubin was a guy we were talking about 3-4 years ago as being the great U.S. star. He's now 22. I know he looked good in this game, but he has essentially flunked out in Europe and now back in Liga MX. So yet another example of a player that between 18 and 22 hit a wall. Julian Green's another one. He was in this between 18 and 22, right. Hit a wall.
Yeah, but that's the thing, though, too. I mean, to me, I'm all for playing the youth. I mean, all giving them an experience. But when you're playing against such a weak opposition, it's really hard to tell how good or not they are, because yeah. They look good because the actual opposition is so inferior. To me, though, too, and that's the thing, too. If you do criticize the U.S. men's national team, then it's almost like you're being unpatriotic. It's not right. About you know, it's not about the football. It's about, well, don't you support the United States? And it reminds me a lot of England, because England always hypes up the youth. Like, they'll have a young player that play one game, or even in the Premier League, and score a goal, and you know, and then all of a sudden this is the next big thing. And then you mean he plays for England in a meaningless friendly against some Eastern Bloc country, and people going crazy about it. It's the same thing. It's frustrating, Kartik. Anything more to say about this one before I move on to Mexico-Wales?
No, that's about it.
All right, speaking of meaningless friendlies, we had Mexico against Wales. And I'm Welsh. I was born in Wales. I grew up in Wales. And I'm an American citizen. And I also have my British passport still. And I go back to Wales every few years or so. But in this game, I couldn't believe how many youngsters Wales was playing against a pretty strong Mexico team. And even some of these Welsh players that came off the bench, I was like, I don't even know who these people are. I've never even heard of these players. They're so like kind of low down in the ranking. It's good that Ryan Giggs is playing a lot of these youngsters. We saw David Brooks from Sheffield United, who's a really promising attacking winger at times or centre forward. So some good youth coming through the system. Played in front of a huge crowd at the Rose Bowl, but I think I switched it off after halftime. Again, it's a meaningless friendly. It's just an opportunity to get these players some fitness and to kind of gel together before the World Cup in Mexico's case. But as a TV viewing perspective, it's a complete turn off. All right, Kartik, so now buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there is a better way to buy, and that's with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out with friends, or need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and just with a few taps, I can instantly find seats. I used the SeatGeek app just the other day to buy tickets to the International Champions Cup coming up this summer throughout the States, and it's really, really easy to use. Now, SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. It saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, my listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code WSTPOD today. That's promo code WSTPOD for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Now, Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news.
Yeah, so Fox Sports is reported first on World Soccer Talk. Has acquired Club Tijuana, the Zolos, rights in English and Spanish. And they've also picked up some other Liga MX rights with Monterrey and Santos Laguna. Obviously, Santos Laguna, the reigning champions. Monterrey have been arguably the best team in the North American region or in the CONCACAF region, club team, over the course of the last almost decade. Tijuana is probably one of the most popular club teams in the United States. So, great pickups for Fox Sports as they're losing rights with other soccer properties.
Yeah, I'm surprised on this one that more people haven't reported on it. So Will Soccer Talk broke the story this week, and this is huge. This is massive news to have English language and Spanish language rights to Liga MX games. And like you said too, Kartik, Club Tijuana is kind of a very hip club. It's just over the border from Southern California. I know there's a lot of soccer fans in Southern California that they consider that their home team. They'll drive down to games to see Club Tijuana play, usually on Friday nights for the home games. And that's what Fox has the rights to beginning in late July. They'll have the rights to the home games for Club Tijuana in both Liga MX and Copa MX, as well as the Spanish rights too. So the Spanish rights will be on Fox Deportes, and we're looking at probably FS1 or FS2 for the actual English rights. Now, the Santos Laguna, which is huge too, because, I mean, they just won the Liga MX, was it the Clausura, just a few weeks ago. So the Santos Laguna rights will begin in July 2019. So listeners will have to wait a year for that to be able to watch those games on Fox Sports. Monterrey, it'll start in, again, late July this year. Monterrey, I mean, it's got a fantastic stadium with a beautiful backdrop, one of the oldest clubs in Mexico. And then Santos Laguna, they're definitely doing really well on the pitch. So this is huge, and there's a lot of people excited about this, and I think this is going to be a huge hit for Fox Sports. So, I mean, full credit to them for making a great decision here to bring on those rights, and it'll be interesting to see who they put in the spots for the commentators and the analysts. Because personally speaking, so far with the Mexico games, the L3 games, I think the talent that they have is pretty weak. So there's definitely an opportunity to improve in that area. Now, Kartik, speaking of Fox Sports, our friend Rob Stone, Fox Sports presenter, was on the Alexi Lalas State of the Union podcast this week. And I listened in just to see if there was anything, any news or anything interesting that came out of it. And here's what I got. So let me go ahead and play this for you, and then I'll get your reaction, and then I'll talk about my reaction in a second.
Napoli's been there. Roma
showed great growth this year.
Roma showed great growth and all that kind of stuff. But Mamassi's case is how it relates to the league and the perception of the league, especially globally now, because these are global brands. And I'm not talking about the individual teams as global brands. I'm talking about the leagues as global brands. you still cannot touch the EPL. Now, the EPL is the most popular league in the world. I would say that it is, for a lot of people, the most entertaining, and I don't think I'm going out on a limb by saying that, but I would also submit to you that it is the most competitive because of the fact that there are so many teams, notwithstanding what Manchester City did this year, but the fact that you can have a Leicester, the fact that, now, what, not competitive relative to MLS, where any team any year can win it, but you still have so many more teams in the EPL that at the beginning of the season you think this team can win it, as opposed to those other leagues. So, yes, Real Madrid is dominating, and La Liga teams have done very, very well. But I don't think that it translates to the value of La Liga in the way that it translates to the value of EPL.
I look at a lot of things through a marketing or PR type eye scope of things, you know?
There are many people out there that would take you to task for
right.
that. I get yelled
right.
at that for all the time.
Yeah,
I think American soccer fans do that more so than any, but just because...
Probably, but my point being... La Liga, do we have great respect for it? Of course we do. But La Liga only matters a couple weekends a year, in all honesty.
Hot take alert.
Am I wrong? When do Real Madrid and Barcelona play each other? Circle that. Great. El Clasico. Here we go. Then it's like, now change the channel and get me back to my regular programming, which is, you know, the ton of storylines that EPL has so fantastically been able to produce. They have marketed themselves really well. Their PR is...
Okay. And then he goes on and on and on. Kartik, what's your thoughts about that one?
I always get on these American fans of the Premier League, and not all of them, obviously, but a lot of American fans of the Premier League have a very ignorant view of of La Liga. They say it's a two-team league. They say that the teams mid-table in Spain can't compete with the teams mid-table in England. Look, the Premier League's my favorite league. I'm an Anglophile. I mean, everything, so much of my life is based around things that go on in Britain that I'm partial to the Premier League. But I will tell you, I think even teams 10 through 15 or 7 through 15 in La Liga are much better at this point, at this very point in time, than in the Premier League. Chris, I get on these American fans for expressing such an ignorant view, such a view which is divorced from reality, Premier League propaganda, very, very biased views. But then when the person who has arguably the most prominent role in presenting soccer in the United States expresses the very same view, albeit, you know, words it a little differently, but the very same view, then you realize where this comes from. This is just an absolutely stunning, stunning comment. I mean, I just don't even know where to start. I mean, and this is from a guy who's been a presenter, has been the studio host when Atletico Madrid, which is not one of the big two, gets to two Champions League finals while he's the presenter. It's stunning, and he's been they've covered the Europa League, where you've had Sevilla and Atleti again, and you've had even Getafe and Osasuna have these runs in Europa League at Valencia. I'm just floored by this. It's stunning. No wonder so many American fans express such ignorant views of La Liga when it's coming right from the top.
Yeah, it's embarrassing. I mean, it's one of those things that you would expect him to be a person that's actually watching those leagues a little bit more closely, especially with the World Cup coming up. And, as his role asking tough questions to the analyst in the studio, you'd expect him to know about, to be watching the leagues around the world a lot more rather than watching some other, bowling or whatever sports he's watching instead of watching La Liga. But to me, it's completely ignorant and it's embarrassing. I mean, he says that La Liga only matters a couple of weekends a year. If that's the logic he's using, and he's saying that basically...
Explain how Real Madrid's lost season. Nobody in the Champions League could beat them. Explain some of their losses in La Liga this season.
Well, yeah, but that's by going by his logic, where only two games a year matter in La Liga, then that means that zero games in Major League Soccer matters. I mean, I'm sure in his mind he's thinking that, there's a lot of stuff happening in Major League Soccer. We've got parity. I mean, we've got all these clubs canceling each other out. You never know what's going to happen. But it's really embarrassing. The other thing that's embarrassing, too, is that Fox Sports potentially could have an opportunity to acquire the rights to La Liga in the near future with the Bein's rights are coming up in probably about a year and a half to 2 years. That there's a chance for the English language rights to be acquired by, say, a Fox, and Fox could have these games in the afternoons on weekends when they've lost out on the UEFA Champions League. It's really embarrassing, and in some ways I'm not surprised, but still, it's when I heard it, I was flabbergasted. I'm like, I can't believe he's thinking that way, but that explains a lot.
Yeah, it sure does.
All right, moving on. Some big news out of the Middle East this week. And for those who may not be aware of the story, I don't think we've covered it up until this date. But what's happening is that, politically speaking, there's a lot of, turmoil between the Middle East countries, Qatar and Saudi Arabia especially. So what's happened is that in Saudi Arabia, they're pirating beIN Sports' feed that's coming out of Qatar. So allegedly is Saudi Arabia, and actually is the Saudi Arabian government, has been able to actually pirate the beIN Sports feed coming out of Qatar, which means that people in Saudi Arabia are being able to watch the Premier League, the Champions League, and coming up soon the World Cup for free, instead of subscribing to beIN Sports in Saudi Arabia. Now, the channel, the pirate channel, is called, instead of beIN Sports, it's called Be Out Q, which would be, I mean, be out of Qatar is what the message they're sending. And Qatar has gone ahead and asked FIFA to take action on the Saudi piracy, and reportedly, is that the folks at beIN Sports and a lot of the technology kind of experts have investigated this, and they say that definitely the Be Out Q feed is coming from Saudi Arabia, and they believe that Saudi Arabia is not doing anything to try to stop this from happening, and they believe that the government is involved. So this is one to watch. It's just goes to show that online piracy can be used for political advantages. And also, I mean, this is going to be a huge hit to beIN Sports. I mean, they have the rights. They're paying these, I mean, multi-million dollars, if not billions of dollars, for these rights. And they're being hurt by the Saudi Arabian, if not the government, at least the Saudi Arabian pirate group out of there. All right, Kartik, one more piece of news before we move on.
Yeah, so Liga TV rights have been sold for $1 billion, a 60% increase to MediaPro, who also, by the way, acquired the European rights, continental European rights, for Serie A recently, a Chinese company. So this is a pretty stark development. They're going ahead and spending a lot of money to acquire rights to the top European leagues.
Yeah, and just to clarify, so that's £1 billion, so it's about $1.3 billion. This is in France only, so it's the domestic rights. But 60% increase from the last rights deal to this new rights deal, that is huge for Ligue 1, and it's going to give a lot of money to these French clubs. So to, I mean, in the past, I mean, for the last couple of decades, a lot of the European clubs, Arsenal as one example, it's really been kind of picking and choosing some of the best players from France. This will give it an opportunity now for the French clubs to hold on to some of those players and potentially go ahead and compete better in the Champions League.
Yeah, it's very interesting for me because it coincides with Brexit. So one of my big concerns about what happens to the Premier League in a post-Brexit Britain is that there is this possibility that EU-based players without national team caps, and particularly I'm thinking of French, Dutch, and Belgian players at that point, because there's been a huge influx of those players for the last 20 years into the Premier League. They may not be as accessible to a lot of the Premier League clubs, to particularly mid-table and teams fighting relegation. So now there's an even greater incentive for some of those guys to stay in the French League with this added money. So this is this could really kind of develop a change in transfer policies, et cetera, and the flow of players that we've seen really for the last 15 or 20 years.
Yeah, that's huge news. All right, so let's move on to TV ratings. And Kartik, a huge number, an absolutely massive number here for the Liverpool-Real Madrid final on Fox, on the big Fox. 2 million viewers for this one on Saturday from 2:45 to 4:45 Eastern time. obviously helped by Liverpool, I think, in many ways. Yeah, I mean, this is the first time in several years that you've had a Premier League club in the final. Real Madrid with a huge fan base in the United States too. So the two to get combined, 2 million, that's a massive number for Fox. And it's just a shame, too, that they're losing out on the Champions League, and the Champions League going to Turner Sports and Bleacher Report starting in August. The timing of this is bad, but I guess they'll take it, and they'll probably say, like, hey, all that money we saved in having our commentators in a studio, it's you know, we saved some money, and we probably made a lot of money from advertising dollars from having these 2 million viewers. It was even bigger, Kartik, than Mexico. That's huge. So Mexico against Wales, the friendly on Memorial Day on Univision Networks, had 1.8 million, which is by itself a big number. And then coming up this weekend, actually, it's Mexico against Scotland that's on FS1 and across the Univision Networks. That one's going to be at the Azteca Stadium, and it's completely sold out. So a lot of anticipation for that one. That should be a great send-off game for Mexico, but some big numbers coming out of these big games this past week. Now, Kartik, the thing I forgot to mention too, actually, in what we've been watching, is I was going to ask you if you had a chance to watch Phenoms, the new Fox documentary.
I actually did not even know about it, and found out about it after when I was reading The Week magazine, which is one of the news magazines I subscribe to, and it was listed as a TV program to watch, and I saw this on Saturday, and show debuted on Friday. So I will watch it this week. I missed Davinson Sanchez, and I think Max Meyer, right? Those were the first two?
Well, I'm not sure. I missed it myself. So just for background, I think there's a lot of people in the same boat as you, Kartik. I mean, Fox did a really poor job of marketing this one and getting the word out there. Last week's podcast, we did have the interview with Mario Melchiot and one of the executive producers, David Worthen Brooks. And we talked about the film a little bit and talked about the whole series. So the concept of it is great. The concept is that they're behind the scenes in the lives, in the homes, in the changing rooms of these major athletes. And they're major athletes in the Harry Kanes and kind of Dele Alli's and et cetera. But there's some of them that are lesser known. So it's a great way to kind of get to know some of these players a little bit more personally. It's just the way that it's filmed is just so slow and dramatic. Overly slow. It's one of those things that for most people, I think within about 5 or 10 minutes, they would switch it off because it's just the pace is too slow. I stuck it out for the goalkeepers one, which is I think the episode, I think 3 or 4. I enjoyed it, but after watching it, I was like, this is not going to work. Most people are not going to get into this. And I missed it Friday night when they had the premiere. So the premiere was on Big Fox. So this is huge. Prime time, 8 o'clock. Most of us didn't hear much about it, but this is 8 o'clock on a Friday night, and they had a doubleheader. So they had the first episode followed by the second episode. So TV ratings, that's why I bring it up, is this past, so that opening night. So the week prior to that, just to give some context, so the week prior to that, Fox on a Friday night in that same time slot had a show called MasterChef Junior. Which is a broader appeal by all means, really. So that one had 3 million viewers for that first hour of the show, and then for the second hour of the show, the MasterChef Junior, they had 3.5 million. So that's the context of it. So Phenoms in the first hour on Friday night had 813,000 viewers. Which by itself, in soccer circles, that's a good number. But when it's primetime Fox on a Friday night, in all homes across the United States, that's really low, really, really low. And then for the second hour, it had 511,000, which is even lower. So you can see that people watched the first hour, and of those that watched the first hour, a large percentage of those dropped off and didn't even watch the second hour. In comparison to MasterChef Junior from the previous week, where the second hour of the show was actually about 500,000 more than the first hour. So all in all, disappointing numbers. I mean, from Fox's point of view, it's really to promote the World Cup. And again, it was, I mean, I used the term before, but it's half-assed. It's most people didn't know about it. We did the interview with Mario Melchiot to try to get some publicity, but that's about it. I mean, there's really not much else going on, and I don't see a lot of other people talking about it either. So it's if you do get a chance to watch it, some of us will like it. I recommend watching it, giving it an opportunity, giving it a chance. I enjoyed it. I just wasn't thrilled by it. All right, Kartik, so how about you go through some of these other numbers that came through this past week?
Yeah, so we had 281,000 for an MLS game between NYCFC and Houston on the Univision networks. We had 144,000, just a terrible number, for Sporting KC Columbus game on FS1. 110,000 for Chicago Orlando Pride NWSL game on Lifetime, which, by the way, was a great game. It was a 5-2 match. Orlando won. Cindy LaRue had two goals, so it's good to see her getting back into some form, maybe pressing Jill Ellis to be returned to the women's national team. That game, I should mention, I DVR'd it, but it ran concurrent with the Champions League final, which is interesting. It still got 110,000 viewers. And then 52,000 for the friendly, the much talked about friendly between LAFC and Dortmund on Univision Deportes last week. I can't think of anything worse than a midweek game between an MLS side and a Bundesliga side if you want good ratings. I mean, again, the Bundesliga ratings are terrible in this country. I know there are a lot of people who want to argue with me about how many Bayern Munich fans there are in this country, and how there are so many more Bayern Munich fans than West Ham fans or Everton fans. I don't believe that. And the television ratings certainly back up my point of view.
Yeah, it's disappointing. I mean, the LAFC, which is kind of positioned as a hip MLS club, a new team. Borussia Dortmund, which is positioned as a very hip German club. And Univision, which usually gets massive numbers for any soccer game that it has, 52,000 viewers. And I believe that one of the U17 games that they showed last week on Univision had more viewers than this one. It's strange. It's really strange. It was also on FS1. Which was like a last-minute decision that they decided to go ahead and broadcast this game. I'm not sure what the numbers were for that one, but I'm sure they probably weren't that much better. But really disappointing there. The NWSL number, that's good to see, because it's been really difficult to get any numbers out of the NWSL this season. And I think that's the first one we've seen in since the season started. So 110,000 viewers for Chicago against Orlando Pride on Lifetime. That's great. Great news there. Let's move on to listener mailbag. We've got a bunch of mail this week. First one is from fstover1 through Twitter, and he says that Stu Holden always sounds like he's yelling at me. The Gus Johnson of co-commentators. I much prefer the conversational style of Jim Beglin and others. Jay Riddle says, this is for you, Kartik, on Twitter. Can I put in a request for y'all to include your analysis of the Max Bredos-Fernando Fiore duo commentating the LAFC-DC match, please? Did you get a chance to watch this one?
I did not. I did see all the controversial officiating calls from that match and Bob Bradley's reaction to it. But I might go back now on ESPN Plus and try and watch it, actually, now that you mentioned this. I probably will do that today, Jay.
I watched the highlights, so I watched maybe like a 2-minute clip of this one, and I had a laugh. Again, it depends what you're looking for. If you're looking for just laughter and just pure enjoyment, Fernando Fiore and Max Bredos are probably the two best you can have together in the same booth, because Max, with his goal calls, and Fernando Fiore, where you never know what he's going to say next, it's enjoyable. In small packages. So I wouldn't want to have this every single game, because it'd be a complete turn off, especially for a big, really serious, important game. But for entertainment factor, I guess it would have been better for LAFC Dortmund to have them commentating that one, where it's a friendly, versus LAFC DC United, where it's a meaningful Major League Soccer game. But yeah, it is what it is. Aaron Lee tweeted us this. He says, thanks for the Telemundo World Cup information. World Soccer Talk and Kartik, you guys, it's the best way to access it in the moment. Oh, no. He says, the best way to access it in the moment is via YouTube TV. Going to have to halt Sling TV temporarily. This past Saturday's UEFA Champions League final confirmed to me that most of Fox's coverage is not solid enough. So yeah, definitely YouTube TV is one solution that's going to get you Telemundo, as is Fubo, and Sling. I don't think has Sling. I don't think has Telemundo. If it does, it doesn't have a lot of coverage there. So yeah, good feedback. Average Geek, John on Twitter says, you complained about the championship final on ESPN Plus, but it was 5 to 10 years ago that, and it was on ESPN. No. Let me start all over again. Sorry, John. You complained about championship final on ESPN Plus, but if it was 5 to 10 years ago and it was on ESPNU, it would be the same issue. Which I get what he's saying, which is accessibility. And I think a lot of us have ESPNU. Those of us who have cable or satellite, probably we don't realize how many of us actually have ESPNU. So it'd be a pleasant surprise to actually find it if the game was on ESPNU years ago. The fact of the matter is, though, we believe it's been a decade or more since the championship final wasn't on television. And in those years, it would have been on, I mean, everything from beIN Sports to probably Fox Soccer Channel, which is more accessible. It's something we watch all the time. So I get what you're saying, John, but I don't think it's the same issue. But there you go. All right, Raymond Orozco via Facebook. He says, I think you guys have a phenomenal show. I am a Mexican-American, and I feel that Fox's promotion of the Mexican national team is just disingenuous, but I do applaud the efforts. I think Fox dropped the ball during the Copa America. They could have been one of the first networks to really showcase Hispanic American, Latin American soccer culture in this country as uniquely American. They could have went into these communities, into soccer establishments like bars, restaurants, even people's homes, and really highlighted the rivalries of the international level and club level and what drives these. They do this for a lot of English football and European football. Why can't they do that for football from the Americas? Once again, it showcases how uniquely American it is here in the United States. This is a huge percentage of the American soccer fans. Thank you for your time. And he says, which is excellent points, Kartik. I completely agree. And he adds, I know you guys deal with the critiques of the media. I would be very interested to know how England versus Scotland is covered in England. And I would really like to know how a West Indies cricket match between England is covered in England or India versus England, and compare that to how English-speaking networks cover US versus Mexico. I think there are a lot of cultural similarities in these rivalries. So I'll take the England-Scotland one. And it's been many, many years. It's probably been a couple of decades since I've watched an England-Scotland game from England. From the BBC, but yeah, I mean, it was very, at the time, very pro-England, and kind of most of the talk, most of the discussion was all about England, very little on Scotland. So I get your point there too. If it's a say a USA-Bolivia game, USA-Mexico game, where Fox would cover mostly in the past, would focus mostly on the US instead of Mexico. Kartik, anything about the cricket? I don't think you're a big cricket fan, but I don't know if you have any additional to add.
No, I'm not a big cricket fan. Although I think the coverage of cricket in India is excessively jingoistic. I mean, that I've noticed, and it's often done from an Indian perspective. I mean, I think it varies, though, again by network in the U.S. because we've sat down and talked to Taylor Twellman, and he said, look, if the U.S. is playing Jamaica, it's my job to inform the Jamaican fans who might be watching, because we have all of these groups in the U.S. We have people from all these different countries who are potentially rooting for these countries in the U.S. Fox, on the other hand, has not taken that attitude. So I think it's also a difference in broadcaster and maybe broadcast talent also in how they approach it.
All right, one more letter, and that's from Craig Shapiro, and he tweeted us these questions. He says, any idea if Fox Soccer Match Pass is going to drop its subscription price now that they won't have UEFA Champions League and UEFA Europa League next year? They're pretty much down to Bundesliga and Bundesliga 2, right? I suspect there'll be a whole additional subscription through TNT now. So through TNT, it's actually going to be through Bleacher Report. So Bleacher Report will have their BR Live, which you can subscribe to. And we don't know what the prices are going to be yet. I think they're going to have a price per game. So if there's just one game you want to watch, we'll have to wait and see what the price is on that. Or if you want to subscribe for a month or for the entire season. But we'll have to wait and see. What about Fox Soccer Match Pass, Kartik? What do you think on that one?
Price point for me, and I responded on Twitter to Craig, and the price point for me has always been wrong. It's always been higher than the other alternative packages, which give a similar value product. I don't see how they can continue with this price point. But for some reason, since they launched it in 2010 in its various incarnations, it was called Fox Soccer to Go then, or
Fox
something
Soccer,
along those lines.
FoxSoccer.tv.
TV, that's right. And then it was Fox Soccer to Go. It's always been priced too high relative to the market from my perspective. And I stopped subscribing to it years ago for that reason, even though I was missing some of the products, soccer products, because of it. So maybe there's no incentive for them to drop the price point, drop the price. But given ESPN Plus is $4.99 a month, Bleacher Report Live, I can guarantee you, will not be $19.99 a month. Okay, it might be $9.99. It'll probably be more expensive than ESPN Plus, but it's not going to be. You're going to get a lot more value for it. I just don't know how they can continue. But they have kept this sort of philosophy about the pricing for 8 years now, and maybe it's because they just don't have that many subscribers. So maybe they'll keep it at that price. But I certainly wouldn't pay that for what they give.
Yeah. And so for some background on this one too, because Fox Soccer Match Pass is actually a product from Perform, which we talked about in last week's episode. So Perform, it's their product, and it has Fox's, I guess Fox's, Perform is licensing it out to Fox. I think that's part of the reason that it's always been so expensive, is because Perform's taken their cut, whatever you mean percentage of the subscription goes to them, and then also Fox has taken their cut too. So with this one, with Perform now launching DAZN this year in the United States, which is a new streaming product from them, I wonder if they'll just go ahead and get rid of Fox Soccer Match Pass and take all the Fox Soccer Match Pass products, which is the Bundesliga, Bundesliga 2, Copa Sudamericana, some of those games, and Copa Libertadores, some of those games, and then put that into DAZN and then add in whatever additional rights they'll get. So I know that they're interested in Serie A, FA Cup. There could be some other ones out there too that they're trying to snap up. And to me, that would make more sense if you have a product that's directly from Perform, which is called DAZN, is have all the Fox Soccer Match Pass on that stuff on there. Fox already has their Fox Sports Go product, which is, you mean, for cable or television subscription people. And they also have the Fox Sports app. It's confusing because there's so many different ones. Fox Sports app, which also has all of the Fox coverage on there too. Again, it's not for cord cutters, but DAZN is. And maybe it's better for them to split and just go their separate ways and have people go directly to DAZN. Pricing, we'll have to wait and see. I think that's the thing about ESPN Plus with that $4.99. I mean, that shakes everything up. So that puts the pressure on, say, a Bleacher Report, where $9.99 a month. It depends, though. There's some months where there's no Champions League going on, right? So, you mean, during the height of the group stage, $9.99 makes perfect sense, I think. But we'll have to wait and see. All right. Thank you for your comments, questions, feedback. You can always reach us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can post your comments on our website, worldsoccertalk.com, and we'll read those out on air. So thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, YouTube, Stitcher, TuneIn, iTunes, Audioboom, and worldsoccertalk.com. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review on iTunes. We'd greatly appreciate it. And Kartik, with a little bit of a break, there's still a lot of soccer going on. What should they do this next week?
Enjoy your football.